get that on the street.
Should we just grab some books?
Yes.
And he's unable to attend, and they were the first step on the agenda, so I was, thought I'd just go ahead and give you all your house investment agreement. When did yours come out?
2 years, I think. 1.5, 2 years.
I just knew that it wasn't yours, wasn't due now.
It's not turning up.
Didn't mention that, though, to you.
I will check and be sure I have it on the count for that future date.
How hard is it to correct any typos?
If you'll correct it, I'll get you another copy over.
Okay.
Morning.
She's got a PFM in my name.
Oh, come on, man.
It's my name, though.
That's what I thought. Wait, okay. Stoggers, I'll get you another one.
I'll follow you up your room. You want me to just draw a line? Or you'll email it to me?
I'm going to get the attorney. I'm sorry about that.
If you need to, we can just handwrite it, initial it, sign it, and then you can follow up later.
Because it's got to go before the council.
You got it.
Councilman Glenn is called, he's in round.
He'll be here, he's actually here.
Rick, I think Mr. Glenn will be here in just a second.
Okay.
Thank you all very much.
All right. Thank you all for coming. This is the...
Morning, Mr. Glenn.
Morning.
Morning. Morning. Yeah, morning. Stacking up again on his way.
Morning.
Morning. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm calling the meeting to order about 9/11 on November 1st.
You didn't have late for me.
Email's late too, so.
Okay. First thing I'd like to call roll. Councilman Nguyen.
Here.
Mr. Ricky Horse.
Here.
Cindy Kelly.
Here.
Rick Horn. Here. John has been excused. John Leahy has been excused. The minutes from the last quarterly investment, there's a change of address that we end up meeting upstairs in the finance office. And Marie Brooks also attended, and she was not listed as an attendant. Are there any other changes to the minutes?
No, I didn't have any.
Approve as amended.
Second.
Okay. Yes. All right. PFM is supposed to be the next one up, and unfortunately they had a family emergency and he was not able to attend. I thought he was going to send mail anyway, but it doesn't look like that they're able to attend. Next up on the agenda,
I didn't bring my agenda either. I have an agenda. It's me.
Yes, Sawgrass.
Sawgrass. See, go ahead.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. I'm David Furfine, fixed income portfolio manager from Sawgrass Asset Management in Jacksonville Beach. Good morning, everybody. I was hoping Steve or Mel would go in front of me and get all the juicy stuff for the economy out of the way so we can talk about something real, but I'll start from the beginning. Taking a step back, if you look at the minutes, you asked us what we thought the next 12 months total return would be, and it looks like I said a quarter ago that you'd get 1 to 1.5% for a whole 12-month period. Very weak, low returns. If you were to take a quick look on page 3 of the report, in the upper right-hand corner, the Sawgrass portfolio for the quarter earned 1.57. So a little bit above the high side of a 12-month forecast from a quarter ago. So that either means I was wrong or we've got even weaker forward-looking numbers coming. And I think you got even weaker looking forward numbers coming. And we'll get to that in the next couple of minutes. 1.57, right on top of the 1.59, your benchmark on the next page. All the longer term numbers, your 1 year is your fiscal year return, and we were able to earn 4.78 versus the A or better 1 to 5, 4.79. So I missed by a basis point. I apologize for that. A couple of things we've done in the portfolio that helped and hurt. Namely, we did not think interest rates would be so low today, or another way of saying that, it did not think that the bond market would be so strong. We got some results of the last quarter's GDP announced last week, and we got a 2% annualized growth rate for the quarter, which is a little bit faster than the 1.7% GDP annualized was the prior quarter. I'm going to characterize both of those quarters as weak, slow growth, plodding economy, not enough growth to where jobs will be created. And until we get jobs created and we get away from a 9.5% to 10% unemployment rate, you're not going to see robust consumer spending and the beneficial virtual circle that that creates. So what we have now is waiting on the Federal Reserve to announce their QE2, quantitative easement, second time. They're going to be buying a bunch of bonds, and whether they buy more than we think or less than we think, or even bother to tell us how many they're going to buy. I think what they're going to announce is, we're going to buy enough, and we're going to start any day now, and just keep your eyes open, and I'll let you know. They can't put a dollar figure on it. They might say, today I'm going to buy, or this quarter I'm going to buy, but they're going to leave the upside unknown because they want to convince everybody that they'll keep buying until everybody's happy. I don't know what that's going to do for the economy. Microsoft, IBM, the high-quality corporations are issuing debt at below 1% returns, 1% coupon rates. What project is corporate America going to do, pass up on today at these low rates that a little bit lower rates would do for them? So they don't have anything to do until their business models pick up. They're making money, and they're just holding on to their cash. Corporate America has more cash on their balance sheet at any time today than over the last 30 years. They just don't know what to do with it. So they're buying back stock, they're paying dividends, and they're keeping their balance sheet strong. I don't know what gets us out of this morass. I think one thing that will help us is tomorrow's election, just because we can stop listening to the commercials that tell us how bad the state of the world is. Once we stop saying bad, then you get some elected officials, whether it's on your side or the other side of the aisle, then they'll start saying, here's how it's going to be fixed. And here's what. So I think you get bad news rhetoric turns into good news rhetoric.
At least for a year, and then you start all over.
Then you start all over. touching on page 5, your portfolio at Sawgrass at the end of the quarter. Let me stop before I start talking about that. We just wrapped up another month of October. Your portfolio that we managed for you earned 47 basis points, and your index earned 42 basis points. I didn't have it in the book because I had to call the office and got the guys on the phone because they're calculating it as we speak. strong numbers are continuing to come out of the bond market, and mathematically they can't continue, and here's why. Your yield to maturity at the end of the quarter was 1.12 on your portfolio and less than 1%, 90 basis points for the index. That's if interest rates don't move and you get your coupons and your accretion and your roll down, you're going to earn about 90, 100 basis points in total return over the next 12 months. Not too much interesting going on there. We do have a bit of a defensive bias with the duration at 2.4 versus 2.6, 90% or so of that target benchmark. And characteristically, the next couple of graphs are showing that Sawgrass continues to significantly overweight corporate bonds, almost to your policy max. We currently have 42%. You do allow 50%. And we are underweighting treasuries in order, and some agencies in order to get that overweight. Well, it looks like we're overweight on the agencies. So significantly underweight in the treasuries and investing it in agencies and corporate bonds to boost the yields. Having said that, touching on page 9, all of your compliance work is well within your policies. What I wanted to spend more time on is a forward-looking discussion. I talked to Dave West here before the meeting. He said, please don't scare him and just put it out there for a topic of discussion. Right now you've got three managers, all with the same mandate, all doing similar type investing with similar type returns. On page 11, I've taken your benchmark. This is actually the benchmark that includes the triple B, so it's not your specific benchmark, it's your old benchmark. And using BondEdge, our analytical software, just shocked the portfolio. You see the yield curve is the current yield curve as of October 8th is shown. In the first column, if you have no change in interest rates and no change in spreads, you're going to get about a 1.4 total return. That's that 1.1 yield and a little bit of roll down the curve. If the economy continues to be weak and we're afraid of an implosion and we go back to the treasury lows that we experienced at the height of the economic crisis when Bear Stearns and Lehman were faltering, you'll see that interest rates weren't much lower, especially 5 years and in, and you'll get the same return, even if interest rates go back to those low levels, namely because the term of your policy doesn't coincide with any of the lower movement in the market. It's only the long end that will go down. If, on the other hand, we get an even worse scenario that the economy is going into a double dip or a triple dip recession, and we turn into Japan and we have a lost decade and there's no economic growth and rates go to zero across the entire curve, we've taken the Japanese market's yield curve, and you'll see that it means that the front end of the curve comes down just a little bit more, but the long end of the curve comes down significantly. Then you might be able to get a 2.5, 2.75. I've got in the book an analysis that shows 2.67. That's just a math number. There's some noise around that. So even if the world turns as poor as we think it could be, possibly be, your portfolio cannot get anything more than 2.5 or so. If, on the other hand, you go parallel interest rate increases up 1%, you get a negative 1% on your portfolio. This is all in a 12-month window. And if it goes up 3% and you say, oh, how could it go up 3%? Interest rates went up 3% across the curve in 1994. I'm not suggesting in the next 12 months we're going to go up 3%, but it's a possibility. Your portfolio, with as defensive as your investment policy is written, you'll lose 6% of your portfolio. I know from these meetings and meeting with you all the time, nobody wants to have that type of number in this type of defensive policy. The suggestions might occur, and Dave's going to have a few others for you. Page 10 has that same benchmark, the 1 to 5 with all of the rating classes, against a 1 to 3 benchmark. All I've done is taken the next shorter one. There's shorter, there's more defensive, there's higher quality. This, I just plucked one more. You'll see that the red line is the shorter benchmark. When interest rates rise, going to the right, You go on the 3%, you get that same negative 6% number, you're closer to a negative 4% return. A little bit more defensive. It also has a little bit lower yield, so it takes a little bit of an interest rate increase for these two benchmarks to be equal, maybe 60 or 70 basis points of higher rates in a 12-month period, and you'll be indifferent between the two benchmarks. If nothing happens, the yield of your benchmark, as we were in last week, was 85 basis points, a little bit lower than what I showed you on the prior slide, and the yield of this shorter, more defensive benchmark is 58, so it's 25 basis points lower yield to maturity if rates don't do anything. So what I'm suggesting is you might want to consider being safer, shorter. You might want to consider, you got three managers, have them do three different things. I have other clients, Dave consults for a couple of them, where they've got a short, an intermediate, and a long being what your benchmark is today. Just a concept. I'm not saying that the world is going to end in terms of interest rates today. There's no reason interest rates are going to go up. The economy is still weak. But you have time to be methodical about it and think about what you want to do and how you want to accomplish it.
I appreciate you saying that, because although the what and the when is big questions, but the need has certainly crossed my mind that we need to reevaluate a little bit and when we set this set of rules, it was a different game.
Yeah, it was a different game. And what really might get in the way of you doing the right thing is knowing that we're going to get together in 3 months and talk about it again. If you said today we're not going to meet for 3 years, where your forecasted interest rates 3 years from now, and put your policy geared toward that, you'd get a different snapshot. It's this constant meeting and talking and wringing our hands and saying, well, I need to make numbers this quarter. So,
yeah. John, or Dave, do you think you'll see some type of movement by the time we meet again, the next quarter, or after the election, new year comes around? Because we're not meeting until after, January?
Yeah.
January sometime?
For interest rates to go up, we have to see a stronger economy, maybe signs of inflation. What drives inflation is high GDP, capacity utilization, very strong and robust. There's a lot of slack in the marketplace.
Right.
Unemployed worker will be willing to work cheaper than normally would. So factories aren't being maxed out. You can start that third shift much easier than building a new factory. So no, I don't think it'll be significantly different. But when it does occur, it'll be quick. It'll be fast. Certain things happen that are surprising. Ford had some record earnings that were released last week, week before. When Ford's making a lot of money. So they fired everybody. And they've right-sized their ship, and they're making money selling 10, 11 million cars, the industry as a whole over a year. Used to be 16, 17 million cars. So I'm just looking for what would cause interest rates to go up, and I don't think we're going to get it today, next week, next month.
I just think the mood of the people after the election will be different based on what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, I think we need.
And I think that's going to indicate where companies are going to, how they're going to spend their money if they think there's the potential for people spending theirs. Jobs obviously, means that people are going to have more money in their pocket and spend more. But they have to think that things are going to get better before they turn loose their money, just like corporations do, and personal folks like me and you.
Right. So.
Well, I do agree. If we, we just live quarter to quarter, we begin to focus very narrowly on our overall objective here. So I think we do need to begin to strategize about what we ought to do. But I do think before we employ a new strategy, we ought to see how the election turns out. So I guess I would suggest that let's get through the election, and then we can begin to strategize and give us maybe this next 3-month window to give us an opportunity to look at what, if anything, we might want to do with our investment policies.
Yeah, Umpton House said us, we had a, got a similar chart in our book, and I think there's a natural timetable that is going to flow because obviously we want to review the investment policy statement annually, and at next quarter's meeting, conveniently, it'll be a 1 year, December 31st. It would be an absolutely appropriate time to maybe put on the table some things that have been discussed during the quarter, so we can iron a few things out, a few ideas out, and see where we want to go.
Let's make that our, one of our agenda objectives for the next meeting.
The next one.
Just anecdotally, I had another meeting with somebody in a very similar position to this committee. It was just a finance director who runs that pool of money. I've been working with him for a very long period of time. Went through dynamite returns that are similar to your returns, and he's very happy, and I kind of talked about the same scenario the other way around, and he was always one to take the long 3, 4, 5 year opinion, and he says, yeah, whatever you do, don't lose me money. Okay, so his policy didn't agree with his personality, so it was great that we had that conversation and had it in time to react.
Well, I just wanted to ask, all three managers on the short term did not make their benchmark. You were the nearest one to your benchmark. Is there anything, and that would have been an index, and the index would have been less expensive to buy into than having a manager. And again, is there something that you, your value that you add in the long term is going to turn around? Only if we change our strategy.
Well, I hate to say this, but I think you're better off if interest rates rise. You're just not going to be better off while interest rates are rising. You do want to take a longer-term approach, and the reinvestment of your cash flows and the fact that you're not losing money, the city is still operating in a very sound position, if I'm not mistaken. So the opportunity to reinvest when rates are 3, 4, 5 are better off. In terms of what we're investing in, I think it's safe for me to say that if you're going to get 30, 40, 50 basis points to be buying a 2-year Microsoft debt or J&J or whatever else, ExxonMobil, the types of securities we have in our portfolio, I'm comfortable taking that position. The fact that even taking those extra basis points for these high-quality securities, we still didn't make the benchmark. It's because we're leaning shorter and more defensive on a maturity position. I think that's what active management is supposed to do. It's a risk management that we have. And we're making decisions not necessarily for this month or this quarter, but for a little bit longer term.
Well, let me ask everyone this. We have a few projects that may be coming up, parking garage and a few other things, and we had thought about, you know, rather than going through the bond process and paying the financing costs and all those type of things, we might liquefy some of this and pay ourselves a higher rate of return through this portfolio than going out on the bond market. Does that make sense in your mind, and can we get to a place where we can liquefy enough to do that if we choose to?
Could you quantify the size?
Yeah, probably in the parking garage would be in the 3 to 5, probably closer to mid-range 4.
Yeah. That would not be an issue whatsoever for us to...
There might be a few other smaller projects too, but, you know, 10 million tops. And, we could.
There shouldn't be an issue for any of the managers because each manager probably holds something in the range of 25 to 30% in treasuries.
That was my assumption. So, and I assume that makes sense. It does to me. You know, we can save the financing cost and pay ourselves a rate of return and pay back quicker if we
want.
That's
what we have.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty...
Yeah.
What's the amount?
$60 million. Yes.
I mean, you know, we would pledge it. I mean, we have the cash, it's our cash, but we'd still pledge it with our CRA dollars, some of those type of things, you know, just do an in-house approach and make ourselves an interest rate that makes sense, and we can do, we can pay 3% easily and do better than this.
The only reason you wouldn't is if you needed to have a certain critical mass of reserves to maintain whatever credit rating you're looking for, but that small dollar amount doesn't seem to...
I think it'd help our portfolio and to save us dollars on the other end and help us move a lot quicker.
Right.
At least makes sense to me that we might do that. And so I just wanted to raise that issue. And
$5 in that garage will cause a lot of other things to happen, like we were talking about when we were having that discussion. We're using it as an economic development tool to bring development downtown. Will create a lot of other dollars.
Well, we got two blocks that have just recently been awarded, and it'd probably take multi-year build out, but we're talking somewhere in the $20 to $30 million private investment range. And part of the issues is parking, and that's just that, and there's other opportunities that would come with it. So
once you get through all the underlying costs,
implicit
and explicit,
exactly,
it would make sense.
Now, I would agree with you completely. Now, your financial advisor may tell you otherwise. It's just like Dave was saying, why is Microsoft issuing debt even at, 7/8 of 1%? They got more cash than they possibly could need on the balance sheet.
Right.
Yet their public finance department is telling them, issue debt at these great low levels. The hurdle rate is so low, we got to be able to manufacture something above that rate of return.
Right.
Why do they need the cash? I don't know why they issued that.
Okay. Move to accept the report.
Second.
The report, Sawgrass, has been accepted.
Yes. Is that agreeable?
Yeah.
Agreeable?
All right. Okay. Sure.
All right. Stable River.
Hi, I'm J.P. Arzinski from Stable River. This is Rick Nelson, our Chief Investment Officer and CEO. In terms of, I'll just kind of briefly touch on the economy. David touched on most of it. We did get GDP last week at 2%. If you kind of start to look inside the components of GDP, the idea of, green shoots kind of continues to be out there, that, the economy is starting to show that it's healing itself, although the healing process is extremely extended, and which is kind of atypical because with such a deep recession, typically you have a much faster period of growth following it. We're really not. We're kind of still on life support here. But inside that GDP number, you did see consumer spending actually increase. So that's a positive sign that the consumer is beginning to feel a little bit more sure of himself and beginning to spend. We're talking about incremental amounts here. It's nothing to hang your hat on, but it is a sign that...
Right direction.
Right. It's everything that we've put into the system is beginning to kind of take hold. Some other things anecdotally that are out there is if you look at the Challenger Gray and Christmas does a survey on temporary employment. If you look at temporary employment, that number is at like a 3-year high. So you're seeing workers being put on a temporary basis. Now they're not being put on as a full-time basis. If you begin to look at how is that correlating then? So continuing claims. Well, continuing claims came out last week. That's going to, I think, a low that we haven't seen since pre-Lehman Brothers. If you look at new unemployment claims, that number is beginning to show some signs that it actually is dropping. Again, these are all minute little things, but there's signs that, okay, if we can maybe resolve some of the uncertainty that the election poses, we've had a very different government since the presidential election. We've had a lot of things go through Congress. If you were a corporation, you saw TARP and various policies going into place, which you didn't necessarily know how that was going to impact you from a budgeting performance or a taxing standpoint, then you probably wanted to sit there and put a lot of things on hold. So you maybe didn't want to add staff. You were in a period where you were reducing staff to anticipate a slowing economy. But now, okay, well, I'm putting this temporary worker on. I'm going to keep putting temporary workers on. There will be an inflection point where those temporary workers go to permanent jobs. So if you can resolve some degree of uncertainty or give corporate America some degree of confidence that, okay, we understand what the operating environment's going to be for us, we can now incorporate that into a budgeting and planning process, and therefore we can, start a project or add to employment, or things of that nature. I think you'll see then the economy begin to get some traction. You know, as David, you know, mentioned one specific company, Ford, making a lot of money. Corporate earnings throughout this earnings period that we see right now are running much better than expectations. So, you know, we're seeing the fact that margins are there. It's not just a beat on the fact that we've reduced so much from a fixed expense standpoint or a variable expense standpoint. We're beating top line on revenue, and we're also beating, you know, because we've reduced costs so much. So our margins are actually fatter than they've been in previous cycles. So there's room there for, you know, corporate America to ramp up and, you know, and do some things. If you look at new home sales, we've kind of moved past the stimulus of the, you know, home buyer credit at this point. That's you know, several months behind us at this point. We're not seeing a major drop off in new home sales. They're kind of bouncing around, you know, at seasonal rate, or I'm sorry, an annualized rate of around 500,000 homes. So they're not getting any worse. They're not getting materially better, but that's signs of that there's stabilization coming into the market. We've talked, you've probably heard a lot in the recent weeks about, you know, the foreclosure moratorium and shadow inventory and everything of that nature. To the extent that financial institutions begin to slow down the foreclosure process to make sure that documentation is done correctly, that is going to draw out that shadow inventory further out in time, which is going to put less pressure immediately onto the housing market with a glut of new, of more foreclosed homes coming into the market and the banks willing to accept a liquidation bid just to move it off their balance sheet. It's going to be there for an extended period of time. Maybe it's another 6 months, maybe it's another 8 months while the documentation goes through the court. But the fact that that draws it out a little bit further is less pressure on prices in the front end. So that actually can help, you know, from an optic standpoint of looking at where home prices are. It's not going to necessarily be down at a 2 or 3% annual rate. Maybe it slows down to, you know, real estate slowing down to maybe a down 1% or 1.5% annual rate. And that actually might give some people the confidence to say, okay, well, I've been waiting for a while and, you know, I'm a long-term buyer at this point. I feel like most of this is behind me. I'm willing to step in now. So you may begin to see that. So there are signs. And then if you look at, too, the idea of quantitative easing, you know, the Fed is definitely signaling to the market of, look, we understand this recovery is extremely tedious. We understand that, you know, we're very subject to any type of weakness. If an exogenous event were to occur, we know that would put us back into, you know, a double dip type of recession. So we're going to keep the foot on the accelerator, and we are willing to do whatever it takes to plow through this, reliquify all the, you know, this market and get consumption going again, because then through that, then they'll go ahead and begin to see the economy expand. So the idea of how much more incremental consumption is going to be there, you know, if the Fed goes out and buys, you know, $500 trillion in treasuries, you know, is you know, a 15 basis point move in treasury rates going to really, you know, spur consumption. You know, the debate on that is still being had. You know, some people say it could be anywhere from, you know, a quarter of a point on GDP, it's maybe as much as a half a point on GDP, and people say, well, is it really worth it for that? Well, I don't necessarily think it's about adding that little bit of GDP. It's really about providing a confidence to the system that we are willing, the Fed is willing to continue to do whatever it takes to get through this. And I think the federal government and Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve is very conscientious of the fact that so much has been destroyed from a confidence standpoint that this is how we're going to rebuild this confidence. So, and I think too, once you get past the election, a lot of the scary talk about, you know, how bad things are, you know, that will go away to a certain degree, and we're going to enter into a very positive seasonality type of range with the holiday season out there, and I think that helps too.
And you already begin to see that. I mean, they're starting to ask the question, why are they just talking about the economy? There's the war and this and that and the other things they've forgotten about, which some are saying are more important issues. So you already, even at the tail end of the election cycle, you're starting to see that the dialogue starting to change, and you know, realize it's all about posturing for the election for the most part. So.
Right. But if you look at corporate America right now, I mean, it's probably as healthy as it's ever been, you know, in the last 20 years in terms of, you know, the amount of cash that's on balance sheets, you know, ratios out there. And I think that you'd see that also being reflected, you know, in the debt market in terms of what spread the market is putting on, you know, corporate debt at this point. Spreads are extremely tight. I think for two reasons, because the confidence is there that we understand these credits at this point, especially things like Microsoft, where debt is extremely low. We feel confident in going out and buying that, but also because, you know, in reality, there is pressure on market participants to add yield right now, and if you can add 10 basis points, 20 basis points of incremental yield by being more in corporates, there are participants in the market that are saying, yeah, I have to have it. You know, I can't just afford to sit on the sideline and a T-bill or whatever. I have to have that little bit of incremental yield. So they, yeah, that is driving spreads lower too, to a certain degree. But in terms of how your portfolio performed in this period where we're in the recovery, if you look on page 3, your returns on the Stable River Run portfolio was 158 basis points. That's a basis point behind your index of 1.59.
But everyone is pretty much one basis point behind the index.
Yeah, we're all right on top of each other. So, which I think is, you know, unique in the time period that we've all been working here, because we've all kind of seen various things, but I think we do kind of have some degree of consensus between the three managers that, yes, you know, rates are going to be, returns are going to be relatively low going forward, and there is a concern, I think, on the part of all three managers that, you know, we have to be conscientious about being aware that at some point in the future, in the near future, these portfolios should be run from a much more defensive standpoint, you know, with regard to the possibility of much higher interest rates and the possibility that those interest rates can go much higher than where expectations necessarily may be pricing things in, just as we've seen interest rates come much lower than expectations have called for. There's probably the likelihood that they'll, you know, do the opposite as the pendulum swings the other way. So I think that, you know, we're all conscientious of the fact that we're going to need to be defensive from that standpoint.
We don't think that's imminent. You know, as JP said, that housing inventory, yes, it's the foreclosures have slowed down, which is good short term, but it just prolongs the problem long term. And, you know, we've talked about that shadow inventory for a period of time, and also on you know, potential for bank earnings, where this ultimately does get shifted back to where, you know, banks like Bank America or Wells Fargo, which bought, you know, Countrywide and Golden West and
right,
the mortgage issuers that had, you know, issues out there issuing those mortgages in, you know, 07 and 08, if they get, you know, those mortgages start getting put back on the balance sheet, there could be some potential risk there for those financial institutions. So there is a big difference between where, like, a Microsoft is being spread historically. You know, they're about as tight as it's ever been. Actually, we came out of Microsoft and bought an agency and picked up a yield versus some of the bank names, which we think are going to be okay long term, but we think there could be some short term pressure on the names.
Is that driven by the housing deflation or the fact that they're having so many problems with foreclosure markets?
It's so many problems with the foreclosure market, and okay, we think that will continue for a period of time.
How long do you think that will continue?
You know, we think it's going to continue throughout 2011.
Okay. All right. You were talking about, Jeffy, you're talking about, you know, the economy is doing good, and I, you know, you watch the stock market.
But doing better.
Better, but I mean, it's going up and everything like that, but then you look at, you know, the mood of the country, the unemployment rate, and, you know, the housing, you know, people don't have jobs, I mean, banks, you know, would loan, I mean, in this extreme, anybody that has a heartbeat got a loan, to you got the best credit in the world, we're not going to loan you the money.
Right.
So, I mean, when does it get somewhere in between where you see that, you know, getting back to, I shouldn't say normal, but, you know, somewhere in the middle. of that scenario that I described, and, you know, people don't have jobs, so they're not going to the bank and borrowing money.
It's got a lot to do with the election and the government and the feds and where it goes. You know, the swing could go dramatically the other way next week.
I mean, if you look at what this crisis,
they talk about repealing, you know, we're going to go repeal the health care. Well, there's problems with that too,
right,
at this point, you know. So we got to be careful. And they're saying, well, if you repeal it, now what happens to all these 26-year-olds we put on and all these other things? And,
you know.
I mean, well, there's a lot of things in the healthcare bill that have nothing to do with healthcare. I mean, they're talking about charging you 1%, you know, on your deposits.
Right.
You know, transfer money between your checking and savings account, you pay 1%.
Right. You know, one knee jerk reaction doesn't follow another.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if you want to look at everything, you know, politics aside, you know, what you're seeing here is you saw, leading up to the credit crisis, you saw over leverage, right? I mean, you saw, you know, various entities, whether it's consumer or in the case of the investment banks, they, you know, were outside of their means. They didn't understand what was at risk. Okay, so now we saw the destruction of some of those entities. You know, and now we're seeing a leaner type of operating environment. And because of that, we're seeing balance sheet repair, right? So savings rates are up. So we're, you know, consumers out there are getting less leveraged. So, you know, now part of that less leverage is coming because you're seeing so many people, okay, well, I defaulted on my mortgage, so now that's off my balance sheet, goes back to the bank. And now from that individual consumer standpoint, well, their balance sheet looks better. You know, they didn't really pay down the debt, they just defaulted on it. But there are people out there who are paying down. If you look at credit card outstandings, that's actually been decreasing from the peak. So you're seeing the idea that we're going through this balance sheet repair. Now, corporate America can do that much quicker than, you know, consumer America. Corporate America can lay people off. The average American consumer, you know, there's no one to lay off, so you have to reduce your expenses. Well, you know, you either have to wait till you pay off that car loan or start cutting things like, you know, maybe, you know, premium cable services or, you know, cell phone services, things of that nature. But you can't get to where you need to go as quick as corporate America can do it. So we're waiting for the consumer to get to that point where, okay, you know, their debt-to-income ratio is a little bit better. That takes some time. So that's really kind of, we're muddling through that. Now, various things on the political agenda can help alleviate that or help repair the balance sheet on the consumer through your tax rebates or, you know, keeping taxes low or, you know, or the incentives to do something with your money, you know, that can help. So that's where the legislative side, the political side kind of comes in. But
or
overall,
forcing the banks to refinance people whose home may be underwater but have never missed a mortgage payment, never been late on a mortgage payment. Well, and those people, as you say right now, there's no way they can refinance their homes. But politically, they could put pressure on the banks to say, yeah, you need to refinance that person. They've never been late on a payment. They're a good credit.
Right.
You know, they're going to take that $400 and put it in the bank.
They've moved that credit score, too. You used to be able to get a backed loan for like a 680. They bumped that up to 720. Mm-hmm. So now if you don't have a 720, you can't even, and a 720 is for the bottom best rate.
Right.
If you're not over 800, you're not getting the best of the best rates.
Right.
So you've got consumer pressure there. And with the amount of defaults, I mean, you know, election nonsense aside, if you're unemployed on November 2nd, you're still unemployed on November 3rd,
mm-hmm.
and November 4th, and November 5th. Mm-hmm. And if you missed your payments from January to November, you still missed your payments from January to November. Political rhetoric doesn't change Main Street. And if I, you know, if I don't have a job today and I get a job tomorrow, I'm not going shopping. I'm not buying a car. I'm going to eat. I'm going to pay the light bill. I may start to make up to some of my creditors.
You're going
to
make reparations.
Right.
But about 35% of America's below 720.
Exactly. Right.
But you need to clear up some of the environment.
Regardless.
So that the jobs can get created. And as the jobs get created, then you'll see confidence come back in.
But you know, local government went through the same thing. They were getting AA rated bonds based on the fact that the city's was growing its water customers by 6% a year over the last 15 years, and now it's stopped. Mm-hmm. And so how you know, you don't have those ratepayers paying to cover your debt service, and the, you know, so the city's having, it's the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the city's that had enough foresight, or in some cases just fortunate enough to, and that's what they're doing, and that's what we're doing. We're not borrowing money. We're putting our cash aside. That's why we're talking about what we just talked about. If we do take out some debt, that we'll do it with ourselves. So it's, you know, we're playing the same game as everybody else. But in this case, I think we can help our treasury a little bit.
Well, eventually we're going to get to a point where there's value out there. And that's the housing market. I think so many people were in the house that shouldn't have been in a house. And those people are out of the market now. Now you've got to get back to the you know, how low can a house go? Really, it's
probably a little bit lower from here.
Okay.
But, you know,
once you get to that point, then people will.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're all saying here is the same thing, which is this is a process. And we've moved from, you know, one extreme
right.
to the other extreme, and now we're moving back towards the middle again. But this is a process. I mean, going from a positive to a negative, that can happen very fast.
Right.
You know, but going from a negative environment to a positive environment is usually much of a much more staircase type of process. But things can go to hell in a handbasket, pardon my French, fast, right? But things can, it takes a while for improvement to happen. So we're going through that improvement process here. But we do need to be aware, I think, as David mentioned, that at some point out there in the future, we need to be very conscientious as managers, as we are every day, but extremely aware of the fact that at some point on the horizon, interest rates are not going to be where they are today. They're going to be significantly higher, and we have to anticipate that as managers, and I think it is worthwhile to have that discussion internally about, you know.
Or significantly higher still means significantly lower than when I paid 12% for my first house.
The Fed can deal with inflation. It doesn't know how to deal with deflation. Right. And so the Fed is going to continue to try to inflate the system, and that's what QE2 is all about.
And isn't there a concern for coming up for this quarter that the extended unemployment benefits are going to lapse for lots of folks? They had these extensions and the extension, and this, they're going to lapse here shortly.
Yeah, they've already been, so your max unemployment benefit now is 99 weeks.
Right.
It's probably very unlikely that that gets extended.
And I know there were some reports about this last time it's going to lapse by December. So then you'll have a host of folks who have been relying on that unemployment benefit as their only source of income, who now will
fall off the system
to no income, which impacts ratepayers and, you know, things for
us. But that's, you know, in reality, some of those people need to fall off the system so they can get off their duff.
There might not be anywhere for them to get to.
Well, there's jobs all over this town, posted everywhere. There really is. You know.
But the way we were running the portfolio in this type of environment is, you know, somewhat from a neutral standpoint. Our duration is neutral. I think it provides us with agility. If you look at where we are right now, you know, we're underweight treasuries, but our treasury agency component combined, or our treasury agency component combined, is close to a 70% allocation of this portfolio. So from that standpoint, we're extremely safe with the investments that we're made, that we've made right here. You know, and I think that we're going to continue to kind of be from that standpoint. But Rick, definitely tell us about, you know, where we see strategy going forward.
Well, and the other point I would bring out on the portfolio is the same point David made is, you know, for budgeting purposes, we would also strongly suggest expectation for lower rates of returns in 2011.
Unfortunately, we don't, the portfolio. We don't use our investment much for budgeting.
Okay.
So. But
okay.
That doesn't mean we don't want a 4%.
It's in
the
budget.
Yeah, but we don't rely on it that heavily.
About $9 in the general fund.
Yeah, the interest income side of it will probably stay relatively the same. It's the market value, what the total return of the portfolio will.
We're not taking the interest income off of this and putting it in the general fund, are we?
No.
No.
She just stays in here. So
But we do factor interest income into our budget.
Yeah, but that's not.
But not this interest income.
Yeah.
That's
through everything else we have.
Two issues that we need to talk about. First off, here's your forecast, and second off, you all had a turnover that I think you need to bring up. And just, I realize that you all are stable. The people that handle our account are stable, but. Were you guys owned by SunTrust and now you're not? Is that
no, we're still owned by SunTrust.
We're still owned
okay.
by SunTrust.
All right. All right.
But thank you for
time.
Yeah, wasn't it?
That was some time ago, wasn't it? A year and a half, 2 years?
No, we just lost two people in Stable River just about 30 days ago.
Oh, okay.
They left. The president of actually Stable River reported to me, Paul Robertson, and Rob Corner, one of the portfolio managers within Stable River.
Okay.
And as you know, we've talked to the committee in the past, back in June of
this year.
This year we talked that we were exiting the liquidity business. And the liquidity business is very, very short-term management, 2A7 money market funds. We manage the Ridgeworth money market funds for Ridgeworth and for SunTrust. Roughly, that was about $20 billion in assets at its peak. Stable River, again, for round purposes, had assets of about $30 billion. So by year end, we're going to be about $10 billion in assets under management at Stable River. So there will continue to be some restructuring within Stable River between now and year end within the liquidity group, which we're exiting. Paul, obviously, you know, saw what was going on with that, and Paul and Rob left to go to another firm. I don't exactly agree with where they went to. They went to a retail high net worth shop to try to pick up the institutional liquidity business. But I truly wish them the best of luck. But there's, you know, we will be exiting that marketplace. And so they decided to leave Stable River to pursue that. We did replace Paul, David Edson within Ridgeworth, who is the co-CEO of Ridgeworth, is taking on those business responsibilities for Stable River. And that's what Paul did for me. He ran the business side of things so I could focus on the investment side of things. And so David's going to be picking up those things. We are not replacing Rob at this point in time. Obviously, we have strong people within the liquidity business that we're going to be moving into Stable River, the short duration side. And then we have our tax exempt side, which is down here in Orlando. And so as far as, you know, Stable River will be a smaller organization at year end, but I think we'll be stronger because, you know, we're not going to cut back at all in research. And so all our research department, instead of having to focus on liquidity, short duration, and tax exempt, is now just going to focus on short duration and tax exempt with no cutback in staff whatsoever. And so we also, as you know, within the last year, hired somebody to be the head of the credit research department. So I think the research will even be more focused than we've been in the past. And I think we have capacity on the portfolio side of things because liquidity is not reporting to me anymore. Over the past year now, research is not reporting to me, just the head of credit research is reporting to me. And so I'm going to be picking up Rob's part of the taxable portfolio management, which was primarily focused on corporates. And that's what I've done for 28 years.
Again, it probably had no bearing on us, but I need to bring it up.
No, you're absolutely right. Thank you.
Everyone's aware that yep. there was some turnover, there yep. was some change,
yep.
and how it's going to affect yep. the city's money.
And we'll put an org chart in next quarterly meeting, because then by then the liquidity should be gone and kind of give you an idea of, you know, what Stable River is at this point.
If I might add, as a follow-up, obviously our research group, and again, as communicated at the last meeting, has had conversations with folks at the Stable River, and you know, can confirm everything stated. You know, not to be second guessing, but all comments are made have been consistent. We continue to monitor the changes in the firm. But obviously there was a clear message sent with the sale of the money market division that yeah, there's a strategic decision to exit that portion of the business, but all other communication with our firm has been consistent with Rick Nelson's comments. So we'll continue to monitor the flow. Thank you for asking the question. I was going to ask it, get it on the table for the record, appropriately asked.
Anything else to report on this?
No, if you accept it, then you know, certainly we're open to any questions. So,
if you accept it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye. Now, even though
PFM's
not here, do we want to accept the report?
Accept the report.
I've read it. It seems to be pretty much in line with, it's almost like you guys wrote the same thing this time. I would like to just move to accept their report even though they're not here.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. That takes care of everyone down to Bogdan. the bargaining group needs to give a report, and in that, maybe guide us next go around to, if we were to point to diversification of the portfolio, we still have to have the main goal of the portfolio needs to make sure that no assets go away. But if it's an area of higher performance, maybe that's something that we could entertain, a shifting of the gears.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. If I could field the second one first.
Okay.
And to do that, let me take you right to page 5. And I think it's been fairly communicated by all your vendors here this morning. Clearly, there's been a sea change of significant magnitude over the last 14, 16 months. And the gist of it with the coupon, if your coupon is arguably your source of return, if you're going to predict what the coupon, you know, what's my return going to be for any given year, I don't think any bond manager would dispute, well, let's look at the current yield and coupon, and let's call it that because we can't speak with certainty, especially with any timing and certainty as to when interest rates are going to go up or down or to what way. I think obviously the biases are similar, and obviously the sea change is that coupons are back to historically low levels, so projecting ahead, just doing the basic math, that suggests the returns going forward should be lower. Okay, but it also suggests another thing. The lower the coupon, the more price sensitive a bond is to changes in interest rates or changes in price. And the purpose of the chart on page 5, and I'm going to apologize in advance for the, it's a very brash, it's a very harsh chart, and we really put it in that way by design. And what you're looking at here, you've got the blue and the red. This is the term.
That's not political, is it?
we should have made it green. This is the term structure of rates, and this is just using Treasury's yields at the time as of 9/30 of 2010. And the purpose of this chart is just really to explain the basic math that's at work here. If you have a one-year time horizon, and you look out at each term, the one-year, the two-year, the three-year, the five-year, and again, we're not looking at a portfolio. This is just the individual securities. If you were to have a rate increase by 1%, or commensurately, if you had rates fall by 1%, just to let you see the price impact going out by maturity. Now, we need to couch this a little bit because if you look at the points, checkpoints down on the lower left portion here, because you have active managers, they are implementing a number of strategies which are going to mitigate the harsh math effect. Okay, I mean, first and foremost, you've got a portfolio of diversified bonds, diversified maturities, so you're not going to feel the direct impact of a negative 8.36% because you're not all in 10-year bonds. Okay, but you've got a number of mitigating factors here. The longer the holding period, the less you've got reinvestment, you've got curve roll down, your managers are all positioning in the best parts of the curve so they can own bonds that will, as they mature 1 year later, it's a lower interest rate, and again, rates went down in that case, so your bond price went up. All these mitigating factors will help offset this. However, we did want to put this in, this chart in the book for this quarter to indicate that look, we think it would be an appropriate time to adjust our long-term expectations. Again, we don't know if it's going to be this quarter, next quarter, maybe a year out. However, because there is this fundamental sea change, the coupon is low compared to historic norms, that would suggest there's inherently more risk in the market. Now, we would, as a consulting shop, we would prefer to refrain from any type of interest rate forecasting. So we're going to look at the basic building blocks. What is fundamentally different now than was in prior periods that led us to create the strategy or recommend the strategy that was in place. And that's what we're seeing, very different, worthy of you know, several pages in the book in discussion. So I guess what we would like to do, I guess following on the heels of Dave's comments, you know, we would like to follow up and discuss pre-meeting some potential different strategies, you know, test the level of comfort. We'd like to get everybody's input on that, obviously, and come up with for the next meeting, you know, potential changes in the strategies. Now, a couple general, speaking generally to answer the question, general paths that we could take would be to provide mandates to each of the managers. Each of these managers actually manages money a little differently.
Right.
They each have an expertise, a little more expertise in certain areas than others. One thought would be to break those out by specialty and assign appropriate benchmarks. Second thought would be to de-emphasize, and I want to say this carefully, but to de-emphasize the emphasis on total return in the investment policy and place a orientation more towards income. And the third suggestion would be to look at how we're mixing the durations of the various benchmarks that we might assign. And again, to Dave's point, we might look at perhaps giving a shorter benchmark assignment and generally looking at how those factors would be best allocated across the current talent and take a look at what the scenario analysis and projected analysis of that might be. But you know, from our perspective, that would require some discussion with you and see what path
yeah, we need to schedule that time, out. Rick.
Okay.
Is that
yes.
Address that question?
My question or point would be, you can't have him going to small caps, him going to large caps, and then compare them at the end of the day. So or do you take 30% and 30% over here, and you both got to do the same scenario? Both same universe.
Right. The universe measurement, and we've discussed the universe measurement is already needs to be understood what's behind the numbers. Universe measurement would be a little trickier, but that's something that perhaps to your point needs to come forward in meeting discussions. And I have a comment on the performance in that regard to your earlier question. But universe, yeah, it becomes a little bit trickier and will require more discussion on our part, I think, to understand why everyone is succeeding or not in the universe. And as far as the index performance, again, the suggestion would be to assign the appropriate index, the investable universe that we want to have these managers go to. So that will be accurate and specific and can certainly be catered to the appropriate allocation. Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir. What I'd like to do is make a recommendation that he follow up with me and build a model, and then we make a recommendation next quarter.
Well, do that, but I would like to pull the committee together prior to the next quarter meeting to hear your recommendation first.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. You're talking about total yield and then or spending more time on getting, or not time, but effort on having emphasis on total income. What do you mean by that? What are you trying to accomplish by doing that?
Well, if I could answer that perhaps by example.
Okay.
Under the current index, there will be a increasing amount of treasuries in that index. Obviously, with the monstrous debt that has to be financed, that's going to create a continued, there has been and will continue to be a heightened level of treasury issuance. That then becomes part of our market-based index. Now, any bond manager, and if you guys have any different opinion, please pipe in, but any bond manager is going to be very cognizant of the index that they're benched against with particular regard to the duration sensitivity and the sector they're overweight or underweight. Now there's going to be a heightened risk because treasuries are the lowest coupon, most price sensitivity. They're going to make a disproportionate, arguably, will become a disproportionate share, or at least an increased share of the benchmark. So if you're managing to that benchmark and your focus is on total return, it's going to pull you away, perhaps. I mean, income is a strategy that you could choose to actively implement or not, but it is inherently going to, you're going to want to be in and around, you don't want to deviate from that benchmark too much. And if that benchmark is now becoming a little riskier, the manager is going to be kind of moving in that direction. And if we can get a income orientation as at least a secondary consideration, that would help, in our opinion, that would help alleviate some of that inherent natural bias, management bias that's going to be in place with any professional bond management portfolio. Okay. Does that address that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, one other comment, if I could. I don't want to belabor the economics, although I think we would say in three words or less or 3 points, we think the QE2 is pushing on a string and we're in the election camp. Talking with both small and large corporate clients, there's a frustration over what exactly does healthcare mean, what are the regulations, what are the costs to me if I'm going to put an employee on the payroll. I don't know. It's a moving target, so I'm not going to do it. We don't know what our tax rates are going to be next year. We can't plan for that as individuals or as corporations. And also, we have financial regulation, but we really don't know what the details of the financial regulation package is going to be. So that kind of brings us back to who ends up in control and exactly what the details of these packages get worked out. And in our opinion, until these issues are resolved and everyone has clear marching orders, if you're heading up a corporation, you're going to wait because you don't know what the implications are putting anything in place. So to us, that's the catalyst. We're talking about the need for the catalyst that has to happen to get things going. But looking back now over the last year, I'd like to address, from our standpoint, the one of the manager performance issues. If you go to page 3, here we have the quality of the bond market, and we've been following this every other quarter or so, broken down, and the commensurate returns by rating. Essentially, if you look at and bring your eyes down to the bottom right chart, if you would, the one-year performance. Bonds rated AAA, great year, 9.6%, but if we were able to own bonds rated BBB, wow, we almost doubled that. We were up 14.7%, and obviously anything sub-investment grade, less than BBB, was up 18.5%. Quick and dirty takeaway here is low quality garnered the preponderance of returns by multiples. And the higher quality portion of the bond market, while it did well, did in no way come close. Now, if you remember, we're still carrying the investment grade index. We made that changeover when we revised the investment policy statement to be A or better. And when we run the trailing numbers, because we had to carry that for that, impute. That old index into that number, okay? In our opinion, that's been a hindrance to manager performance. You've got three high-grade managers, and you had a benchmark that was measuring the lower tier, which was very disproportionate in its return. So when we look at objectively, hey, you know, what were the reasons? It might have been duration, or it might have been a couple of things on the wings, but in our opinion, you know, just looking as the independent third party, the credit quality limitation and perhaps the not apples to apples measurement played a big factor in that. So I just wanted to address that that performance issue. As you identified in the compliance checklist, which is the very last page of the book, we did flag that the 1 year performance for all managers was below the benchmark. So I wanted to address that point. You already on all the issues.
I like 30 pages before I got something. Really? Oh, there it is.
So while we're on this page, all other holdings and all other investment policy issues, everyone is in compliance. And as we look to close the fiscal year, obviously you have a, you've got a very well-run program, and you have a number of fail-safe checks in place with obviously with a third-party review, with independent investment management. You've got a number of layers of safety and protection here, which has served this this plan very well. So we had no compliance issues for the year, the only one being the one-year performance, and hopefully that explanation makes sense. And again, we have no vested interest. If the manager comes or goes, we receive no compensation, no lunch from anybody. But again, we want to present an objective viewpoint on that performance issue.
I think one question I have is, you're saying the one-year number is it's a blended basically rate between them, you know, 1 to 5 triple B or better and 1 to 5 A or better?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're going to, the index we use is going to come straight from the investment policy, and the date of implementation, you know, 31-day posting delay,
right,
from approval from council and all that. So we're always going to impute from the policy.
Mm-hmm. So come 12/31, then
it may improve.
Well, that policy then will just be the, you know, we're going to be benched against a one-year A or better return.
Well, it'd be the 1 to 5 year,
right?
High grade Merrill, high grade.
Right. I would say it'll be a 1 year look back, so there'll be no blending of the two benchmarks.
Correct.
At that point.
And to your point, basically see relative performance by virtue of measurement only pop up.
I've got both, actually all three benchmarks in my book. If you would like to look at page 4, just very briefly.
If you've got them in
the benchmark, you got them in your book.
Yeah.
The one-year blended benchmark, that's one quarter of the fourth calendar quarter of last year and three of the others. You got the blended, you see how it's higher than the A or better version, but lower than the full gov credit, which is the triple B or better at 521. The three quarters from January 1, 2010 are all the A or better. You see how the calendar year to date matches the next line down, 452 to 452. So you've taken the 452 and then linking that one quarter of whatever that was that led into the significantly higher 5 1/4 return.
If you go to page 15, if I may, let's cover the cash flows first. And since this is a fiscal year, if it's all right, I'm going to dance below the top box, which is the quarter, and the bottom box, which is aggregate the year's results. So basically, as of June 30th, we opened up with, again, all the managers combined, $161,227,70. Our contributions for the quarter $33,926, and you can see how they were, I'm sorry, million, that's how they were allocated. You can see the aggregated contributions below, $12,628,510. There were no distributions for the quarter. For the year, a total of $12,500 went out. The fees, deducted custodial level fees, were $33,926 for the quarter. Taking the full fiscal year from the custodial statement, $128,510. The income component for the quarter was $1,266,865. Happily for the fiscal year, you earned over $5 million in income. Coupons, you know, still up there. Unfortunately, it's come down, but we earned $5,255,753. The appreciation component, which gave us the extra gas, obviously, for the quarter, $1,205,586. On a fiscal year basis, the appreciation was $2,244,986. So basically, we closed the year September 30th with $163,693,222. Any questions on the cash flow? All right, let's go to page 16. Just convert that to the numbers. Percentages, and in aggregate, the total fund net your manager fees for the quarter was up 1.51%, and for the fiscal year, that put us at a 4.83. Put the fees, go back to the gross number so we can put it into the universe. Again, the universe caveats notwithstanding, that put us in the 34th percentile for the quarter, 38th percentile for the year. Again, long-term numbers look good ahead of the benchmarks and well up in the peer group. As reported for the year, we had manager underperformance to the imputed benchmark, but when you look at the numbers versus the SBA for the entire year, earned 0.27%. And again, remember the SBA is under a liquidity mandate. They're not managing for total return, they are managing for liquidity. That's the much lower returns. Interestingly, SPIA at the Treasury is under a similar mandate. And the various benchmarks listed that Dave referenced are below there. So you see when you can make the comparison to the A rated or above, manager performance actually looks better for this period. So those are the percentage returns. Maybe just leave you with one, unless you want to go into any manager specifics on page 21. And this is tracking the a bigger snapshot in time, going back for 5 years. And we're looking at the 3-year rolling return advanced every quarter. And you can see the box on the top right. Also breaks us down by shade, and that's the peer group, top to bottom. And the red dots there are the investment policy benchmark for the time. And you can see when you look at the aggregated results, you know, going back to the, you know, we're very quarterly to quarterly in what we're looking at. But when you look at more a more meaningful investment period of time, rolling 3 years, you can see you're well in the top quartile with the blue box, and you've actually been accruing investment returns that are nicely and meaningfully above the benchmark over that longer term time period. All the risk measures down below, everything looks good. The amount of return, the risk taken, all those ratios and numbers appear very favorable. Did I leave anything out?
No, I'm glad you explained why the universe is a little bit off from
right
the 1 year.
Okay.
Move to accept.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
And with that being said, I've got one little issue that we want to just talk about briefly, and that's the cash flow for the city. We're maintaining about a $60 million bank balance, and right now, SunTrust is paying us 0.4%, which is really minute. Even if we took it over to SBA, they'd almost double our money at it's 0.35. With
SBA, it's 0.35. Mm-hmm. How's that double? Is this something?
Right now we're at 0.2.
He said 0.4, but we're at 0.2.
You said 0.4 originally.
I'm sorry, 0.2. Okay, 0.22 is what SunTrust is paying SBA. With their liquidation and even with their order, on the worst case scenario, they're at 0.35. I would like to entertain a motion to move at least 10, if not more, over to SBA to get a double the return from SunTrust for short term. And that would be liquid, you could liquidate that within 24 hours.
What's been our history for cash flow needs? Particularly through the hot summer when we pay a lot of cash out by electricity.
Yes, sir. This is the change in the cash level. And see, we've got, that's when the...
What are you looking at? So we can look at what you're...
Very last page. This is the bank balance as of the last day of the month for every month for the past 2 years. And if you'll notice, 2 years ago in June of 2009, the City Council said to put $25 million to the bank account to make sure the liquidity was maintained. and I've been with the city for a year, and I've noticed that we're maintaining well above a surplus level. And all I wanted to do is make a recommendation that we move some of the SunTrust money over to SBA to double the interest rate. SBA, it's liquid, it's within 24 hours, you can move the money back at our needs.
I'd recommend we do that, but at the same time, I still want to get a better feel, because I don't want to leave it in SBA either if we can put it back into return. But I just want to make sure we don't, based on what I'm seeing here, we don't need that much cash by a long shot.
Right.
But the thing to remember is, one of the reasons we don't need that much cash now is because we're buying less power. I mean, that was what we were spending X million a month on, or whatever that number was, because we're using less power. So I want to make sure that is, when we're in our heavy growth, I can't remember, we're down, 10, 15% on our power supply purchase, which is a lot of the cash we were using. So Mr. Gwynn, I would accept his recommendation and move it to the SBA for now, but then I evaluate further, because I think we might want to take some of this cash and put it back in the Treasury, actually.
And maybe go long-term after us.
Yeah, I'd like to get John at the table and understand.
Yes,
but
if I could interject, I find it would be very difficult, I think, for the SBA to continue to pay that rate. So I think in all likelihood, you're going to see that rate move lower. I mean, if you look at a two-year treasury at this point in time, a two-year treasury is, call it, 56 basis points.
Lower, don't you think the bank will move lower too, though?
Not necessarily. I mean, they may very well, but the bank is looking to pay, make a deposit, so they're making money on the spread. The SBA is buying commercial paper out there, which is fixed off the LIBOR curve. The LIBOR curve had a brief spike in the spring, on concerns about the European debt crisis spreading. If you were able to capitalize on a steeper LIBOR curve, then you saw money market rates move up at that point. But I mean, at this point, if you buy 6-month, agency discount notes, you're not going to get 40 basis points. So I'm just saying, unless SBA is doing something outside of what a money market can do, then it's in all likelihood that level of return is going to be difficult for them to be able to maintain.
Yeah.
And not to mention too that, and SBA is going to be influenced too on money coming into the system, and you're about to see a huge influx of money into the system from tax receipts at this point, from now through December. And so this rate is going to be influenced negatively by the fact that a ton of new capital is coming into the SBA, and they can't reinvest that new capital at these existing rates.
With the 24-hour notice, we can swap back and forth.
Right, I just wanted to put that out there.
But I think the bigger issue for me is, do we need that much cash in either one of these accounts, and should some of them
go back out to long-term?
Yeah, so I would like to have that discussion in the next quarter, too, as part of the discussion, and then bring us all back to the table with the recommendations that we can review.
As we're cleaning up the books and getting things balanced and getting a better picture of where we are, we'll be able to better assess that.
The biggest thing is the cash flow for power purchase, but I think another 10, 20 million might even be worthy to look at putting back. But
let's study that. About $12 million, and now they're down to 9.
Yeah,
they could go up by 25 more percent.
Yeah. So
okay.
I'd recommend that if you concur. Okay, so we'll move it to the SBA. I would just say, frankly, though, we track it and give enough, I would grant the authority to move it back and forth. But the end run is, end game here is to figure out what to do with this cash and get it maybe back in the Treasury pot.
Yes, sir. And with that, I move to adjourn the meeting at 11:31. Does anyone else have any more business to bring before?
Nope. Sure, we can't figure out something to keep us another hour and a half. Thanks.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good seeing you.